We'll get started now. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Unspun episode number 69. I'm here with Robin Eubanks. Robin, welcome to the show. I apologize for the late delay. We had a weird glitch starting off, and then we had a weird feedback loop. Robin forgot to mute her YouTube video page in the browser playing there, so we had that going. But everything's squared away. Apologize for that. We're going to be discussing education and personalized learning, Common Core, social engineering, all kinds of good material tonight. I'm excited to have you on. I think Clint Richardson and others recommended me to you more than a year ago, and it's just been, you know, always inundated with too much to do and too little time to do it in. So anyway, Robin, I'm happy to have you on the show tonight.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
And let's begin with a little bit about you, Robin. How did you get started in this? What's your research background?
I'm an attorney, and I'm a parent of three children. And I was, in the 90s, I was general counsel of a publicly held healthcare company. And in figuring out what was going on in healthcare in the 90s as things changed with what was going to be Hillary Care. I discovered once my kids started school that what I had figured out in healthcare was related to what was going on in education, that nobody was quite giving an accurate story on. It was somewhat related to outcomes-based education. So accidentally, I'd be sitting in the audience as a parent. I would recognize that I wasn't being told the truth, and what they were requiring in terms of the actual implementation was different from what parents were being told. And so I had people say, you know, what you just explained to me, everyone needs to know. And I said, that would require I write a book. So that's what I did.
All right. So where should we begin? There's a lot to discuss here. I took down some notes about, all of this. Why don't we start off with, you know, most people will assume right off the bat, well, personalized education, it sounds good, right? I mean, everybody wants a education catered to their own child, right? So what is the real truth behind personalized education?
Personalized learning, as with most things, it sounds alluring. It sounds like it would be a good thing. The major shift in education is away from education as being about the transmission of knowledge to education being about changing the child's perception, how they see the world, creating a desired worldview, and how they're likely to act in the world. And so when you're talking about personalized learning, the parents are going to hear that term, and they think, oh, it's a better way to learn algebra. Oh, it's a better way to learn how to read. Oh, it's a better way for them to learn to write that caters to their style. That's not what it means at all. Personalized learning takes what your child currently knows, what their experiences have been coming into the home, what they believe, what their guiding ideals are. It gets to know the child, and then it changes the child. So I talk a lot in the book about targeting values, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. And some of the spiel out there will take that and insist that somebody's creating a database of those values, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. That would assume that we get to keep those values, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors. The purpose of education is to change the child's values, to change the child's feelings, to change the categories, the ideas that they use when something happens, because everything has to be experiential. So instead of, if you were an A student in the old days, you would build up from facts and figure out kind of what you come up with your own concepts. You would come up with what makes different ideas come together. Now they provide the ideas. So it's inductive, and it's designed for you to accept the ideas and have them be what guides your perception, what guides what you pay attention to, what you ignore. As you have experiences in your daily life, It is what how you filter those experiences. And that's what's targeted in personalized learning. So the purpose of education becomes how to change the child at an internalized neural level in order for them to have the desired behaviors be likely in their adult life.
And one of those behaviors will be under this system that the child will grow up to think about things emotionally rather than factually.
Absolutely.
And then from that, think, and I, you know, from my own research and doing this show for nearly a decade, et cetera, I see this stuff constantly, almost every day. People who have never researched anything on a subject will think that their opinions and feelings are and emotions are just as valid as the facts and history of something regarding a topic. You know, it's like you can research something and understand it and then have an emotional response to what you've researched. But what they're doing is they're negating any research and any taking in of facts and using this process to just shut the mind down and use emotive thinking instead, and then, you know, get people to believe that that is the same as, say, you know, Robin or I doing real research and then presenting that research like we are here to the public. So why don't we go in and talk about that for a little bit?
Okay. And there's nothing accidental about that. That has, for a long time, I understood that the neural effects they knew about and didn't care. It's only been within the last probably a year and a half that I just became inundated with the fact that that was the purpose. The neural change is the purpose. And it's bipartisan, so don't think that it's one party or another. It's both. It's gone back decades. It's their conferences, their books. I've got them all. And when you talk about emotion, that's a different part of the brain than factual, non-emotional thinking. And they want to see, when you hear about like using functional MRI on students, and they're literally looking for the part of the brain that's firing during the lesson to be the part of the brain that means that you're thinking emotionally.
Now, let me just interject something. I have a question because I've heard people actually say that we need more emotional thinking and that there's too much. We have just too many facts, too many things we're looking at, too much fact. We just need to think emotionally. Would you agree with that? I mean, I'm a critical thinker and I always look at the facts and details before I get into something. But I mean, it seems to me that the fastest road to hell would be to base all of your life's decisions on emotion.
I think that's true. And it's very hard for those of us who are adults who I call it, cut my metaphor as an axe maker mind. We are well read. We have a lot of facts at our commands. We've had a lot of life experiences. To have an education that is designed to create so that what you want, what you feel, and what you think are all one continuous action, and then they're not distinct anymore. And have that from an early age means that you don't really have those facts at your command. And the huge problem is it's designed through recurrent tasks of a certain nature in the classroom and through online learning to become a habit of mind. So it becomes unconscious that you're using these categories. It becomes unconscious that you use the part of your brain that's designed to kind of marry thinking and emotion. You don't know the extent to which the passages that you're asked to read, the concepts that you're told to think through, when they talk about content, they mean concepts. They mean these principles, and you're to take them as given, And there aren't facts in the way we have traditionally understood education. And most kids don't know there's another way. You know, outcomes-based education has been around for a while. And when it became controversial in the 90s, a lot of parents and a lot of school boards thought, we raised a stink, we wanted to get rid of it, it's gone. And in most instances, that wasn't true. They didn't get all the way to what I laid out in the book as transformational outcomes-based education, which is what we're getting now. But it didn't go away either. It just kind of got renamed. But the damage on students' minds, their tendency to, as you say, confuse emotions and facts, to think that their perspective is equally entitled to being deferred to, even though it's not based on anything that's accurate, true, or demonstrable. And that's consciously cultivated. And they, in the classrooms now, they're telling the kids that you've got to come to a shared need. So if your kid is that one that actually has read a whole bunch of books, he's still being told that he has to come to a consensus in the classroom and that they all agree on it. And that's what they'll implement.
Yeah, they're looking for a middle of the road fallacy, essentially. You know, there's the facts, and then or there's the truth, and then there's the lies, and they want everybody to come to a consensus on it rather than just being able to look at the facts themselves.
They've even come up with a term, guiding fiction, which is something that's not factually true, but it's useful if it's believed and acted upon.
Yeah, you know, and somebody posted in here suspended reality and the anti-trivium method, which is exactly right. I don't know if you're familiar with the trivium method. That's something that I put out about eight, nine years ago with Gino Denning. And the trivium method, it's the exact antithesis of the classical trivium, which was an ancient system of mind control. But the trivium method is based on grammar, logic, and rhetoric, or who, what, where, and when is grammar, logic is why, and rhetoric is how. And so, you know, you can take people through this process of how to break things down and understand it. And this, you know, was the primary method of the single room schoolhouses in the 1800s that they've taken people away from. And we see this collapse into this, you know, emotive thinking. But all of the, you know, using only emotion to do the thinking, if you're not capable of rational thought, and setting your emotions aside, your emotions can often trick you. And I see this constantly, like, you know, like these communitarian movements of, you know, LGBT, QWERTY, XYZ, you name it, backgrounds. And all of these things, they sound good on the surface level. They package them up in a nice, rosy, loving sounding thing. You know, everybody, you know, we should all give this certain group rights, but giving one group rights comes at a cost of, you know, everybody else having to change something for that group. It comes at our expense, you know, and this is something that Clint Richardson laid out in his research, and I know you've been on his show. And, it's like, you know, giving animals rights, the long term of that could potentially lead to us not even being able to properly nutrify ourselves and having a forced vegan diet put upon us, etc. So we have to look at all of these things and analyze them and remove the emotions from it. Look at biology, for instance, in this case, and see all of the facts. Would you agree with that?
I would, but everything I'm seeing circumscribes that ability.
Absolutely right.
And it's because of the sales pitches, because of the active deceit going on in out there, you know, the kind of coordination, you know, you pretend to be pro Common Core, I'll pretend to be anti Common Core, and we'll steer everybody in this direction. And then how dare this lawyer come along and actually read the statutes and read old reports and say, now, wait a minute, this part's true. And this part, they're steering you in the wrong direction, and y'all are working together. So
that's absolutely right. You know, I was just looking for a quote that I have by Stephen Hager, and he says, "But that's the way spooks play their games. If there is going to be a social movement against whatever you're doing, it's best if you secretly create and orchestrate that movement against yourself right away so that it never does any unintended damage to your personal fortunes."
Well, and I've never heard that quote, but the metaphor I came up with was, it is as if we have a left pincer and a right pincer, and they're shoveling everybody across the spectrum in the same direction.
So it would be essentially like the Hegelian dialectic: problem, reaction, solution, or left wing, right wing, same bird, right?
Right.
You know, and so you have these on the left and these on the right, but what you're really doing is pushing this middle direction, and you get everybody caught in the dichotomy of the left and the right.
And a lot of people don't appreciate that there's a lot of money at stake here. And this is not a template that, when it's accurately explained, is okay with any parents of any place on the political spectrum. And so it's been crucially important to misrepresent what's really aimed at in the schools, what these education reforms are really about, that the private schools in many cases are even further along than the public schools are, and that the only port in this storm is to accurately understand what's aimed at and always has been and why.
So you just said that the private schools are worse off into this than the public schools right now?
Yeah. I mean, it takes is a headmaster to completely turn around a private school.
All right. So let's go into Waldorf schools. What can you tell us about them?
I would say that a lot of them, what I have read about a Waldorf school, it's somewhat similar to a Montessori school. It's experiential. It's hands-on. Basically, all of the schools are becoming Waldorf-like. You want to marry. Remember, I was talking about everything has to be activity-based, project-based, experiential. So you want to marry physical activity with supplying those ideas that the students will take as given. And they love to use the word lens, those ideas that are provided and not something you build up from facts, but they have several names. They can be called enduring understandings. They can be called understandings of consequence. They can be called conceptual frameworks, but they're provided. That social justice, the democracy, economic justice, sustainability, so that the, you know, 20 things are how you see the world, and you go looking to interpret everything through those ideas. And there was a story in the New York Times Sunday Review. It was talking about a new psychology called prospective psychology, and instead that the role of memory is to provide information to kind of see the future. And it was a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, and you know, a number of people have linked to the article, and it was by a professor named Martin Seligman. But he's also the professor behind positive education and positive psychology, and the idea that President Obama kept mandating positive school climate in every waiver, executive actions. It's in the new federal statute, pushing these psychological programs on the school. None of that was in the New York Times article. So if you read it on Sunday and you're me, you go, that's the same person that's behind positive neuroscience, positive psychology, this new template that is not in the least bit about knowledge and is all about training the student to act. And they lay out in the article, there's going to be this wonderful new perspective called prospective psychology, and nobody reading it, except probably me, realized just how much it was tied to the vision for the K-12 classrooms, because, gosh, that wasn't in the little write-up that they provided about the author. All these other things that he's involved in all over the globe that are all about how we're going to train the students to think and ground it neurally and ground it in an emotion, and the parents will never see it coming.
Yeah, well, you know, unless they're listening to you or me and other people who have exposed Common Core, et cetera. What, you know, and speaking of Common Core, what can you tell us about Common Core?
The Common Core, I think the best way to understand the Common Core was there were school districts that were still about the transmission of knowledge. There were states that weren't fully on board with what the transformational outcomes-based education. There were places that were still somewhat doing it the old-fashioned way and had not gone to behavioral standards, which is what learning and performance standards are. And the Common Core is like a bunker-busting bomb. If you were one of those places, you were one of those states, you were one of those schools, you were one of those districts, the Common Core was designed to shift you anyway. It's very similar to something that was called the New Standards Project in the 1990s. 26 states were involved with a New Standards Project, and every state that didn't do the Common Core was already on board with the New Standards Project in the 90s and didn't need to be part of the Common Core. So between the two, you've shifted the nature of education dramatically, and every K-12 system in the country, it can vary a little bit depending on whether you've got new superintendents in there, you've got somebody that's been there for a while, you're waiting to retire. It can be, you can still have maybe an older principal in a school. They're holding the line. They're waiting for them to retire. But by and large, everyone has now switched to these learning standards that are about getting at what concepts and feelings and values and attitudes the student has internalized through the classroom until they become neurally based and unconscious and habit, what they call habits of mind. And that's what the New Standards Project was getting at. That's what outcomes-based education was really all about. And the Common Core was the last step to do that. It's not true that it's gone away. It's just been renamed. But you won't find any place that has an old-fashioned transmission of knowledge in the way that parents are still expecting. And Common Core laid the groundwork to shift to competency-based education. And competency-based education, I specify the knowledge, and the knowledge, again, is categories, these specified understandings, the lenses, skills, that is your acting on the world, and dispositions, which is the emotional. And basically, it thinks of the child as a system where you're going to have activity and tasks that they do. You're going to provide the ideas that they use to see the world. And through repetitions over time, that's how their brain will be wired. And competency-based education was always the whole point. Common Core pushed everybody towards that template. And if you listen to things like the New School Venture Fund, the people who created the Common Core said, this is just a bridge to get everybody on board. And by 2017, 18, it'll be gone. Well, it's not gone. It just, you've got parents who think that it's gone. And so their guard is down. They think that they fought the good fight, and they kind of like outcomes-based education. And it's just a different sales pitch.
But well, here where I live, they still have Common Core, and a lot of the teachers actually believe it's a good thing. You know, the teachers are so caught up in emotive thinking, you can't have a rational discussion with them either, you know?
I think what they like about the Common Core, these are performance standards. And you, when you specify what the kids are to know, then being the smart kid doesn't help you much anymore. I mean, it helps the other people maybe in your group because you walk them through things and they get access to your large vocabulary and greater life experiences. But a lot of teachers seem to like the idea that it's equitable, that we're going to expect the same thing of all students. But what we're expecting are behaviors. We're not expecting, something I was reading today from the National Center for Innovation and Education, which is at the University of Kentucky. It's where the guy that started the Common Core, Gene Wilhoit, when he was at CCSSO, he went there in 2013. He got Gates money, he got Hewlett money. They're running the national template from there, and then they go running around going, see, it's the states. It's not the federal government. It's the state. But it's all a coordinated effort because the local is where they want to be. That's where you have physical possession of the child. And if you want something to be neurally based, you need to have experiential. That's the level it needs. You've got to have control over is the local. And so parents think that, and even teachers, that it's up to the states and localities. Well, they've got a blueprint of what the states and localities have to do. So it's more accurate to say that the local is the desired implementation point for a blueprint they didn't come up with. It's been developed at the global level by the OECD, by UNESCO, national level through various think tanks. But there's not any variation about what's intended, what learning standards are, the changes they want to get in the students and how their mind works, and this marrying of emotion. Thinking, emotion, and action should be all like one spontaneous, habitual action. And that's right. That's what's being cultivated. That's why they call Absolutely. Them learning tasks.
Well, yeah, you know, and this is something that happens to me on a daily, almost weekly basis, because I write articles, I present research, you know, and I sometimes use the analogy, you write a book on fishing, and all of a sudden all of these people come up to you and tell you your book on Chevy engines is all wrong. And you try to tell them that you never wrote a book on Chevy engines, and they tell you to shut up, that you need to take their feedback for your book on Chevy engines, you know, and you cannot get them to discuss the facts. And they're so caught up in what they think they know and their emotions, all of this emotive thinking, they just can't, you know, I mean, if you really want to control someone and manipulate them, you get them to think emotively about everything and not consider any facts. You know,
and also visually, the power of the visual is especially combined with emotion. A lot of the online programs, you know, they write about, you know, the visual images that are being put into the software programs, that because your body reacts. Lee and I were talking about Willis Harmon before we started.
Yeah.
One of the things Willis Harmon, back when he was still with SRI and then when he moved on to the Institute for Noetic Sciences, is that the physical body doesn't change how it interacts between virtual reality and physical reality. So if you code into the software for these immersion video games and role-playing virtual reality, you think you're there. You think that's how the world works. You think if they have programmed in X will be the response to Y, that that's how you will become to think that that's what happens in the real world too. And it will tug at your emotions, and it can have that neural effect. And in the meantime, every keystroke what you choose to listen to, all of that's being recorded by. And one of the things that you see in the Common Core and competency-based education, and it was written into the federal law, is they'll talk about assessing for higher order thinking skills. Higher order thinking skills is looking for what concepts and categories you use when there is no right answer. It's not factual. It's a scenario where there's ambiguity. You've never been taught it. There's no right answer. And what does the student employ? Because if you know what they employ in those situations, you know what they employ in everyday life. And in the new statute, that higher order thinking skills is what has to be assessed annually for every student. They mean business at getting at the what's internalized at the level of the mind. And that's really what the Common Core was about. It was, and why it's I lay out in the book that it was laid out by men by the name of John Goodlad in 1985, of getting to what he called a Common Core of learning, and it would be this internalized basis of action in how you see the world. And in many ways, that's still what the Common Core was getting at.
What causes people to go through and question their social control or social conditioning? What are the necessary things for that to happen?
Everything I'm seeing is designed for parents to be completely unaware that this is going on. What you see over and over again is, we need to get the parents involved. We need to get the communities sold on this idea of education. I was reading a report today that was from 2014 for the state of Massachusetts, and they were talking about what education would be like in 2030 in Massachusetts. And they were talking about how people will look back in 2030 and they will talk about the dramatic changes that went on in the school and how pleased the parents were by what they were seeing.
And they turned all of our kids into transgenders and sexless and all of this stuff. So they, you know, I mean, that's clearly the agenda that they're pushing, is this whole, you know, Huxleyan transgender thing, and that's from both Julian and Aldous Huxley. I don't know if you're aware of this, but, you know, I've done a lot of research on Aldous Huxley as well, and I know your work crosses over into Julian and UNESCO, but we have Aldous, and I even had the former Commander General of Army Intelligence of INSCOM confirm it for me on the show that Aldous Huxley was one of the key architects of this CIA's MKUltra program. And so we see both brothers running this stuff. We, you know, pretty much anywhere you see a Huxley's involvement, you know, there's serious dirty business going on there.
I think there's no question. I don't know what they talked about at that dinner table all those years ago, but they were acutely aware from early on of what the social sciences could be used for if you switched away from a transmission of knowledge. And especially, you know, from the get-go, I laid this out in the book, and it's even more apparent now. The whole argument over how to teach reading is, if you are a fluent phonetic reader, none of this works very well on you, because you have that mind that just sees things differently. So they've always known that about reading, and one of the things that they discovered with the Soviets is that if you knew a whole lot about anything, then you're a lot harder to manipulate in this way. So there's a great deal of pressure to try to change the nature of education. It gets back to that New York Times article that I mentioned, was called "We Aren't Built to Live in the Moment," that was this past Sunday. It makes an adult read that article and go, oh, that perspective psychology, that sounds really good. But if you read that article and you understand that the person writing that article and talking about what memory should be for and what what our emphasis should be has a great deal of influence on what's going on in every classroom, in every school in the country, parochial, public, private. They're all pushing this guy's work, positive psychology and positive education. And you see how it ties together. And you get advisors where, you know, you see what goes on at Harvard, and then you see them writing the, you know, preface for somebody else's book, and everything is linked up. These people knew each other. They go to the same conferences. They were the advisors on someone else's PhD. A lot of the people who are at the Harvard Graduate School of Education have artificial intelligence degrees from MIT. And I said it's sort of like they want to change, they want to minimize the human mind and then program it as if it were a computer and circumscribe the knowledge that people have access to. And, you know, if it's not in the, you know, 20 categories that have you've been pushed over and over to make your lenses that you emphasize in the classroom, very few people by the time they're 10 are going to go pick up a real book. And it's almost like, I call it unapproved knowledge. You know, they really do want to out what people can know.
And it's very intentional, step by step dumbing down and controlling people's ability to think, to be able to research properly. You know, they want to keep everybody in an emotive left-hand path thinking, rather than looking at the facts and recognizing that reality is real, that they can trust their own five senses to look things up and to find out what something says. They have to keep everybody away from that. And then, you know, they shrink the mind. And like you said, you know, then they want to, you know, through cybernetics, they want to consider us all as computers because they can, you know, people who don't have enough education are so easily socially controlled and manipulated that they're like, well, you know, they're like dumb computers anyway. And then we'll just have computers program the humans to control the humans.
That is largely what's going on. There's it's really sad when you see a list and they talk about these are the essential learning outcomes we want all students to have. That's not, somebody else should not be specifying these are how we want them to see the world. This is what we want their feelings to be. This is what we're assessing for. You know, it's like censorship before the fact. You know, instead of saying you can't read that, you create the circumstances where they won't have any desire to read that, nor will they have ever been exposed to it. You make the focus not on knowledge of the past and what's worked, but make it the focus on how to change current reality to some desired reality.
Right.
And because you don't have
how
bunch
to sell
of
facts, some social agenda.
Right. Because you don't have access to facts, you don't know what works, what's worked in the past, so you don't go, ah, that's not going to work. So you and I here read what's intended and it's like, this isn't going to work out well. But that's not how the students are being cultivated to believe that if they will it, if they get other people to go along with it, they can make it happen.
And right, it's no longer based on action. Your thoughts manifest reality, et cetera.
Yeah, I read all this stuff, and I feel like I don't have any choice but to do interviews like this and write books and write the blog, because it's clearly going to be a train wreck. It's already a train wreck. It's going to get worse, and the only way out is to talk about it.
Right.
Because there's really not a dispute about what's going on. It's just not enough. It's not on enough parents' radar, in part because there was a serious effort to try that. The parents who were upset about the Common Core, for the most part, who showed up at meetings, were consciously misled in certain directions about what was going on, and they were carefully lied to, deceived about, coordinated with. And now a lot of them, what I'm hearing from around the country is that, you know, Betsy DeVos said that Common Core is gone, and they believe it. They think it's over. And everywhere it's worse than ever. What's actually going on?
As an expert in all of this stuff, how do you overcome people's beliefs in this with facts and information when they, you know, think they won the good fight and they all went home and packed it up? How do you tell them no? You know, this is, and I run into this same issue constantly. And you know, I met somebody last month that had no ability whatsoever to question any basic beliefs that they held.
I think that. So you have to have had some kind of a bad experience with your child in the classroom to be willing to hear what I am saying, because it's not a particularly pleasant thing to be told. You want to
right.
believe that.
See,
everything.
Well, isn't that just it? Because, you know, people don't like the truth. They want to be lied to and told sugar-coated bullshit.
What I tell people when
they're taught to think emotively rather than factually, what feels good and sounds good is right.
When I speak to groups or talk to people, it's like something brought you out here tonight. You can ask me anything you want to. Whatever is bothering you, I probably know something about it and can tie it together. And let's talk about what's going on in your child's classroom that caused you to come out tonight and find out more about what's going on. Because I don't talk about anything until I know I can prove it. I mean, right. I joke about it. I guess
here's the thing. I'm like you in that sense. You know, when I, you know, generally, you know, sometimes if I'm on a really good lead and have a really big one, I'll share it and put it out there. But generally, I've spent, you know, quite a number of hours researching something, and I've got most of the grammar on it before I even present the idea to the public. But
I want it to be provable. I want to know in my mind how it fits.
Right,
in.
But you and I think differently. Your average person out there, they're going to think emotively, and as soon as you try to present any facts that. You know, I know people that anything that challenges what they think they know, anything, they shut down immediately. So how do we get over that? I mean, these people are so damaged, you know, they're such victims of this quote unquote education system that does not teach them how to think at all. It teaches them what to think and how to react. But, you know, what is the step to get this work to the largest number of people overnight?
I wish I knew. I thought there was a market for that, the truth in the story. And what I have learned is, and I do know all of the story of what's going on, but what's really been fascinating is to discover what part of the story people are willing to let through about the Common Core and what's really going on in education reforms, and what parts of the story everybody lies about. And because I have a pretty encyclopedic knowledge of it all, that point where all of a sudden they start to lie, or all of a sudden they start to use somebody else's viewpoint that they're selling differently, I hear it.
Right, me too.
And that... that has told me a lot about what's going on and who all is involved and just how thoroughly. You know, Gramsci talked about marching through the institutions. They're marching through a lot of institutions. I don't think people are aware I don't think most people think of communitarianism as being something that is also called 21st century conservatism, but it is.
Right. And you know, I don't know if you know who Lark from Texas is, but he does a lot of work on communitarianism and exposing this. I used to co-host a show with them a couple of years ago. And, you know, so this subject was always coming up, but they've taken communism and repackaged it under a rainbow of different flavors and sold it back out to everyone. You know, they realize that Soviet-style communism was, there was too much mass murder everywhere. And what they wanted to do was get people to self-eugenicize, to, you know, to not breed and reproduce. They wanted to be able to control people's thinking and ability. And so through the Fabian Socialists, through the Macy Foundation, through Tavistock and SRI and the CIA, etc., MI6, they've created all of this soft kill and soft communism, tiptoe totalitarianism, as I call it.
There, and that's actually, all of that ties to the methods for what's called competency-based education. It's what Common Core transitioned us to, and it is absolutely, it gets at the internalized level, which means it's largely invisible, but it's also documentable that that's what they're aimed at. And, I mean, there's, if you follow the trail, there is a trail to follow, and it's very clear what's aimed at, and it's very clear that, yeah, the top-down methods, that everyone sees them, and the bottom-up neural method is, it works, it's invisible, you just need to come up with good sales pitches that obscure parents, because you know, they used to say that as long as the kids seem to be doing well, most parents are fine. And so that seems to be what the focus is. Your child is learning. Your child is achieving. Your child is growing. We have student growth here. And the fact that it's not in anything that is what education traditionally was about, and that it's very manipulative. It's very much grounded in the behavioral sciences and nudging. And, you know, I get all these big data reports, and I get one every week where they're talking about how much public policy making is now all about the behavioral sciences, and they're writing it into law. So they, instead of, I mean, they're using the law to mandate communism at an internalized level without most parents recognizing that that's where we're going. And if you're me, you know, there was a book that came out from MIT Press about a month ago. It was called Communism for Kids, and some people picked up on it. And I took one look at it and said, uh-oh, and I got the book. Well, guess what? The definition of communism in that book ties to these ideas that are being sold as 21st century conservatism. It's all about the common good and all about the group and all about what they call, you know, the new golden rule. And unless you're, you know, tease these ideas and recognize that, you know, you're dealing with what, you know, Marx was very interested in technology. He thought there was a magic technology that once produced would allow from each according their abilities to each according to their needs. Well, computers and internet technology is the magic technology. So it's like distribution time. But part of that concept is to change people's values, change how they regard others, change how they see their duties to other people. And so we're busy, they're busy trying to give away this wealth that
Right.
Essentially eating sea corn because they of all the mine arsenal.
Absolutely. And here it is. What they do is they attack. They're constantly attacking the family. Everywhere you look, they're attacking the family. And then they create this false tribe that they feed the kids in, which is all these transient hippies that never really contribute anything of value. And then, you know, as soon as they have to contribute, they take off and go to the next thing or whatever. There's no real family there. And then the idea with that is when you have a family, an extended family, you know, your supplies, your resources, your needs go to you and your direct family. And you, you know, and the elderly watch the young watch the elderly, and vice versa. All of this stuff is self-contained, and you don't really care much about government. So with all of these communist communitarian ideals, first you have to attack the family, and then you promote that, well, all of society is your family, your global tribe, like Marshall McLuhan, right? And, you know, so then, you know, they want to move us and break the family completely apart, get, you know, moms reliant upon the government, get the fathers out of the house, and create this totally subservient system based on the state, where then the computers and the technology will dictate, you know, what you can learn, what you can have, you know, if you're allowed to drive to the beach that day or anything like that, based on this nonsense carbon, because people are so dumbed down now, they don't realize that carbon is the foundation of all life, and they think that it's a pollutant, right? So they flip everything literally on end in this, you know, in this Kabbalistic style flip-flopping that they always do. But the public will believe, you know, that, well, it sounds good and it's for community. I mean, it, you know, people, if you hear the word community, the first, your first automatic response should be communism. Wait a second. The Bolsheviks murdered 70 million people in Russia when they brought that crap in. You know, Mao murdered, you know, 15, 20 million people in China. Think of Cambodia, think of Chile, all of these mass murders that were communist driven, and start to get the real picture. You have Bernie Sanders up there shaking, you know, the Lenin fist for his campaign, and people don't even get it. And it's right in their faces.
I know. Well, you see how often teenagers think that those Che t-shirts are kind of cool.
Oh yeah. You know,
And no, they don't know the real stories, and they're not going to know the real stories because that's not where education is going. And, you know, so often when I read something, I think I've a phrase every time I hear founding fathers. I was a history major. I like con law. But most of the time, it seems like the founding fathers said this is the, and I'll read it and go, no, they didn't. but it's sort of like conservatism. It's you label it a certain way, and I guess what they're trying to do is get the adults to do what they're going to teach the kids, which is you accept the label we provided you, you use that label, you think through that label, and you don't dispute it. Right. And you could call transformational outcomes based education a chocolate banana split, and I will still recognize it because there are certain elements of how it works and what it's intended to do. And that's how I feel with a lot of these terms, which is that you read them, it's designed to turn off the mind so that you accept it's conservative. They said they were conservative, and you read it and go, that's not conservative. That's just a restatement of Marx's human development society. So yeah. If that's 21st century conservatism, or if education reform is about changing the structure of the student's brain so they'll be acquiescent to this political vision of the 21st century, we need to know that. Because at some point, something will happen and people will realize, I need to know what's really going on in education.
Yeah.
And at that point, my books and my writing are directly on point and more relevant now than they were when I wrote it, because I was a little ahead of the curve. I accurately saw where it was going, but what I accurately saw and hoped maybe could be stopped, we're further along now, but what's intended and what the background, how it all links together, is still laid out in that book.
Yeah, you know, I just can't help but think, and you hear this lately, their recent promotion of the LGBT QWERTY agenda. And, you know, people are so dumb now that they've actually got people believing that the doctor assigns you your gender at birth. You know.
Really?
Honestly, yes. I am seeing this crap everywhere, every day. And I've been warning people about it. It's all coming out of Tavistock and SRI and the CIA, et cetera, out of these social engineering think tanks. But yeah, I am honestly seeing people that are so stupid, they believe that the doctor assigned their gender when they were born. And they think that they're liberating themselves by denying nature and freeing themselves of the binary, you know, trap that is nature of male and female, which is what brought them into existence, of course. How would people what's the way out?
The way out's knowledge. The way out is to accurately understand what's going on in education, because there hasn't been any variance on the desired template in 50 years. Computers provide a greater level of detail on exactly what's been internalized by the student. And they now, you know, they used to say we can't measure what's inside the black box of the mind. Well, now education's all about controlling what the mind thinks, what the mind does, kind of combining the emotion.
Yeah, and, absolutely. Well, and have you ever read that, the...
That's not changing. So whatever point in time somebody's ready to hear what's really going on, I've got the story, because there's not a dispute about what's aimed at. I've been able to document it. I have stayed ahead of the curve, sometimes just slightly ahead of the curve. And 5 years from now, when a parent needs to know what happened, we know the whole story now.
Yeah.
And what outcomes-based education was intended to do, what the template is, who the players are, the ruse involved with trying to hype the federal government's involvement when the states and localities have always been where they wanted to control education reforms. That's just a big ruse. And, you know, I'm just going to keep telling the story and keep writing. Well, I'm going to write as soon as I can write again, but I can still talk.
Right. All right. Well, you know, that's an hour just about there. So do you want to keep going, or should we wrap it up here? Do you want to continue on for a few more minutes?
We could do a few more minutes since we had a little trouble in the beginning.
All right. Well, you know, and I wanted to ask you, have you read Edward Bernays's book, Propaganda?
I have read excerpts from it, but I don't think I've read the whole book.
Yeah, I do have the whole book in the other room, but there is a quote. Let me see if I can pull it up here quickly. It's actually the opening paragraph of his book, Propaganda. Of course, my website is going slow right now. Great. All right, so here we go. Let's see if I can... Oh, boy. All right. So the conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. We are governed, our minds molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. This is the logical... to them, this is the logical result of the way in which our democratic society is organized. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner if they are to live together as a smoothly functioning society. In almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind.
And, you know, he was writing back when we didn't have computers.
Right.
You could follow exactly what was going on in that black box. We didn't have functional MRI that could see what parts of the brain are lighting up while the student is doing certain kinds of activities. And it was back when the focus of education was on the transmission of knowledge, where literacy was widespread. I mean, you had miners out west who would do Shakespeare festivals. I mean, we used to be very well read, and all of that is going on when Bernays first came up with those ideas. So it's the same desire, but the tools are a whole lot better now.
Yeah, well, and even Shakespeare, I mean, you've started investigating Israel Gallants and Victor Gallants and the Left Book Club and the whole, you know, communist agenda. The Left Book Club was a communist publishing company put out by the Fabians. And these, you know, as my former co-host often discussed, the mind control that's within Shakespeare as well. You know, so, I mean, a lot of this stuff goes really far back. It's not new. They're just constantly developing and perfecting the technology. And the public, you know, we, the people, are the targets of their constant experimentation. And, you know, it's like Aldous Huxley, for instance, in his Brave New World, he realizes that they could use drugs and all of this stuff to control the public mind and promote drugs or outlaw them, etc., to do all of this. And then he creates the 60s psychedelic culture, and he promotes, you know, this whole agenda out there. And then, you know, they promote sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know, peace, free love, all of this stuff. And then you have this explosion in population, and then, you know, and then they're saying, you know, and then Aldous Huxley coins, also, you may not be aware, coined the term the pill, and his brother was working on the eugenics projects. In fact, I read the personal letters at Princeton between Julian Huxley and Margaret Sanger, and, you know, their whole agenda for promoting this whole stuff, this whole, you know, whole thing. But, you know, if they had just left things alone, if population was the issue, well, population would be far less, if we're to believe their numbers at all, if they had just left things alone and not attacked the family and promoted all this free love, et cetera, you know, for the last 50, 60 years that they have.
They do seem to want to plan for us. And, you know, that's what, when parents hear the word standards, instead of treating standards as being a good thing, they're a horrible thing. They're standardizing. They're trying to standardize children's minds and personalities so that they are obedient to someone else's agenda. And that's what standards are all about. And that's what the Common Core was. That's what competencies are. That's what outcomes-based education is about. Was about, or. And you can't have government and cronies stipulating that and have a free society.
Well, yeah, clearly, absolutely. Well, you know, what is democracy? Demo is mob. It's rule by the mob, you know, and it's so easy to control a mob or a herd of people. You know, and you get them to go around and bludgeon everybody else, and you get them to use all this emotive thinking and stuff. And meanwhile, they're just, you know, pulling the strings of the public mind.
Well, they are. And you know, the typical person may not know what concepts have been provided in K-12 education and made the focus of higher ed, because But guess who will know? The media will know. The computer companies will know. And that's what they will pitch to. So then, you know, you get all the horror over fake news from people who want to be able to provide fake news and not have it called fake. They want to control whose work is suspect as a source of facts and whose work will be accepted.
Well, they want the MSM to be accepted and everybody else is fake news. Thankfully, Trump, you know, through that whole thing, you know, destroyed that whole plan. I've never seen a CIA op self-implode as quickly as the whole fake news agenda did. You know, that got flipped back on them so quickly they dropped it like a hot potato. It was rather humorous. But, you know, why don't we wrap it up here, Robin? It was great to have you on. I really appreciate it. Would you please let the audience know your website again?
My website is called Invisible Serfs Collar, S-E-R-F-S-C-O-L-L-A-R. And my book is called Credentialed to Destroy, How and Why Education Became a Weapon. And you said, how do I try to get it across? I actually try to use some humor in telling the story as much as possible, even if it's just ironic humor. But so, and thank you again for having me on. And hopefully more parents will hear. And because there's no dispute about this. And so we do need to get the word out to parents and to protect their kids.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Robin. I appreciate you taking the time this evening, and best to you, and good night, everyone. See you next week. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.